Welcome to News in Focus with your host, Chris Long, President of the Ohio Christian Alliance. Stay tuned for an analysis and conversation about the issues that matter most to you and your family. Here now with this week's edition of News in Focus is Chris Long.
And good evening and welcome to this edition of News in Focus. We're glad that you've joined us. We're actually going to start our candidate forum series on tonight's program, and we're glad that you've stayed tuned because tonight we're going to focus on the U.S. Senate campaign race here in Ohio on the Republican side, and we're going to get to our guest in just a minute. But of course, this week, early February, is the filing deadline. So the candidates are off and running for the May primary, which will be Tuesday, May 1st, and there will be a number of contested races, both on the Democrat and Republican side. I do want to say that our position as an organization, as we are nonpartisan, we do not endorse political parties or candidates, but we provide helpful information such as our scorecards, candidate forms, our educational voter guides, and of course, voter registration efforts. I want to say that the Ohio Christian Alliance is a nonprofit, nonpartisan organization dedicated to promoting Judeo-Christian values in American government, and the Ohio Christian Alliance does not endorse any particular candidate or political party, but we do provide this information to you for educational purposes. In other words, we report and you decide, you the Ohio voter. Well, with that, let's get to our special guest tonight. Well, there is going to be a primary on the Republican side for the U.S. Senate. That is the current seat held by U.S. Senator Sherrod Brown. It will be a contested race in November. And on the Republican side, the filings were confirmed this week. But one of the filings is Mike Gibbons, who is a local businessman from the Northeast Ohio area. And Mike is a candidate for the U.S. Senate race. Mike, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me, Chris.
Well, thank you for taking time out to join us. I know that you've been crisscrossing the state, meeting with a lot of groups and small, patriotic groups across the state and community groups. And people have told me that they have enjoyed engaging with you.
Well, that's good to hear. I've met a lot of great people across the state. It's been, my wife usually accompanies me on these trips, and we both met some great people. And it kind of energizes me to talk to these people because, when you live in Cuyahoga County, you get a little jaded, I think. And the state is made up of a lot of just regular Americans that care about their country and care about their state.
Well, with that, let's talk a little bit about that. Why are you running for the U.S. Senate seat?
Well, if you would have asked me that 2 years ago, I would have said there's no possibility that I would ever do that. And it was a long, hard decision. I had, my personal life is a little easier to deal with something like this right now. Where my last son graduated from college last May, and so I've been freed up. I don't have Saturday afternoon football games to go to, and the kind of requirements that that a parent always has. And I had been involved in the Trump campaign. I was co-chair of his fundraising in Ohio, and had met a lot of those people there, and started thinking about, you know, the possibility of maybe running for office at some point. And I think what really triggered it, I've got five kids and five grandkids, and my second youngest son, who graduated from college a few years ago, he graduated from Georgia Tech with a degree in aerospace engineering, and he graduated with honors, and that's a pretty tough engineering program. And he had a lot of opportunity to go out and make a good living. And rather than going out and pursuing the American dream, he pursued a different dream. He wanted to be a naval aviator, and he joined the Navy and was commissioned a year and a half ago or 2 years ago, and has been in training in Pensacola now. And he's going to be winged as a naval aviator this Friday. And my wife and I are going to be down to Pensacola to watch that. We wouldn't miss it. And anyway, we had visited Ryan early in his time down in Pensacola, and I was really kind of struck by the sacrifice he's making, and you know, he's giving 10 years of his life to the service of our country. And although I consider myself very patriotic, and I've built a number of businesses over the years, started a number of businesses, and created a lot of jobs, I've never really served our country directly. And you know, my father was a high school teacher and a wrestling coach, and you know, our family was about athletics. And you know, in fact, he was a little suspicious of me because I did pretty well in school, and he wanted to make sure I got enough sports in. And he never once asked me what was on my report card. He just asked me what happened at practice. So I kind of knew where his interests were. But military was never really part of our family. We didn't have any relatives that were in the military. I didn't have any grandfathers or uncles or anybody that was in the military. And it just never occurred to me as at that age. And when my son did that, I was kind of almost embarrassed that I'd never pursued anything where it was a direct contribution to this great country we live in. And I said to myself, where could a guy that started out with nothing as I did end up in the position I am in right now, but for the fact I live in this great country? And so I came back from visiting Ryan down in Pensacola, and made a few phone calls. I had been involved, as I said, in the Trump campaign, and a lot of those people that were in the campaign were involved in the transition team. And I went to Washington and interviewed. I interviewed in three departments, HHS, SBA, and Department of Commerce, and ended up being offered a job in the SBA, somewhere between an assistant secretary and a deputy secretary. It's called Head of Office of Advocacy. And I was offered... And I was one of the three finalists for Deputy Secretary of Commerce, which I don't think they've even chosen yet. Apparently, a lot of people are having the same problem I had. But the problem was that I could not wrap up all the business interests I had and the potential conflicts I had in time for a Senate confirmation hearing, which at that point I understood was about 90 days. And you know, was disappointed, came back, and from Washington, and just said, you know, I really can't do that. And people started encouraging me to run for office. And I said, you know, if you want to do something for the country, run against Sherrod Brown, because we don't believe he reflects the ideology and the beliefs of Ohioans. And I truly believe that. And that's why I'm doing it.
Well, you were born and raised right here in Northeast Ohio. Actually, I believe that St. Ignatius was your alma mater as a high school. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, I was born in Cleveland and down on West 77th, and then we moved to Parma. And I lived in Parma until I was in graduate school, really. And, you know, my mom, we had... one person that was particularly successful in our family, it was my mom's great uncle, and he was a St. Ignatius graduate, and he became a lawyer. And it became her target for me going to school. My father was a teacher at John Marshall High School. And if you remember back then, Chris, there was the West Senate and the East Senate, and we would play games, football, wrestling, basketball against John Marshall. So my father wasn't really happy about me going there, and never wore anything blue and gold until my sons went there. But he gave in, and my mother won the battle, and I ended up at Ignatius. I loved it. It was a great 4 years. I think they teach you a lot of things. They teach you, you know, the values that are still with me.
Well, that's great. Well, thank you for sharing a little bit of your background. Tell us about your business career, because I know that's a big part of your quest and how you help others. In fact, I'd like to ask you about the group that you're investing in with opiate addiction recovery.
Sure, of course. I started out, I went to Kenyon College, got a degree in political science and economics, which frankly doesn't train you to do, you know, much. It's a rigorous academic program, but you don't really know how to do anything. And so I went on to and got a business degree. at Case Western. I got an MBA. The MBA equivalent is called an MSM. At the time, that's all I had. And it took me a couple of years to do, but I got an internship while I was there. And it effectively paid some of that tuition I got for free. And it was with an investment banking firm called McDonald and Company here in Cleveland. And it was a great place. It was a partnership, and I fell in love with it. But apparently they liked me enough because they offered me a job. And I had intended to leave business school and go to law school. And I had to figure out how I was going to pay for that, because at the time I couldn't figure out how to get a scholarship. So I went to McDonald and Company, began working there, and went to night law school and graduated from law school. It took me a while, but I got out. Never practiced law, never took the bar, but it helped me a great deal in my career. Ultimately, I left McDonald, had a short stint with another firm for 4 years in Houston, where I commuted every week pretty much. Actually, I was assistant coach to my daughter's soccer team while I was in Houston. And it never really moved my mind or my body or my family to Houston. And I wanted to get back, and I had the opportunity. I had a friend that was a very wealthy guy, and he said, "Let's start a business here in Cleveland, doing what you know how to do." And we were going to start a private equity fund, and my partner's name was Brown. And unfortunately, he was killed about a month and a half after we started the firm. So I was willing to start a new business, but I really had quite an advantage in that I had a wealthy partner that could make sure that I had a salary because I had a family and I had to support him. Well, that all ended a month and a half after we started the firm, and I became a true entrepreneur, and with a desk and a phone, started a business that has now grown considerably and is one of the leading middle market investment banks in the country, headquartered right here in Cleveland. And we've got offices around the country. Our largest office is in Chicago now, largely because it's easier to hire people. But I wanted to stay here. I love Ohio. I like, you know, where I grew up. And it's worked out great. And as we did well on the investment banking side, I invested in other businesses. I've owned a number of them over the years. And you mentioned the addiction clinic. It was kind of a spinoff of a home health care business that I had started with two women that were knowledgeable in that industry, and we hired a woman. When Obamacare came in, the home health care business suffered, and we needed a turnaround specialist. I brought a turnaround specialist in. She said, "I'll do this job, but if I do it, you've got to promise to support the opening of a new kind of a treatment for opioid addicts." And I was anxious to do that. I realized, what opioids were doing to our state and our country for that matter. And I've lived up to that commitment, and we've had great success. We've had substantial, in fact, Chris, the problem is it sounds too good to be true, but we're achieving 85% success rates with hardcore opioid addicts.
That's incredible, because, our Attorney General Mike DeWine has put together a coalition of faith and community groups around the state to address the opiate addiction and the crisis, really, as it is in our communities across the state. He's done that for a number of years now, and he's looking for groups and treatment centers that are having high success rate. And I know that you have mentioned this to the Attorney General, so that's fabulous.
Yes, I've had dinner with the Attorney General. He's on it, and we have a woman that we work with that is his outreach person for the addiction crisis, and she's very excited about what we're doing. And we started out giving people intravenous feedings of a coenzyme called NAD, and I won't get into the science, but it's as simple as this. NAD levels, which are in all of our bodies, become reach very low levels when you have an addiction or alcoholism, for that matter, and we feed their bodies with IVs with large amounts of NAD. We also have some things we've got provisional patents on, and the results are that the cravings are not just substantially reduced, but eliminated in most cases. And we've now developed another kind of patented solution using NAD in a powder form, and we now don't have to use an IV, which is, a lot of people didn't want to go through because it's 5 to 7 days of just having an IV needle in your arm. But now they're drinking it, and we're achieving even better results. One of the great things about it is we can go through detoxification with a patient, and they won't even know they're going through it. And normally it's a brutal period where, you know, you have the worst flu you could ever possibly imagine for as much as 10 days. And we'll take people through this NAD process, and after 3 days, they'll say, I have no cravings, and they want to leave. And we say, no, you got to keep going. And, obviously we have physicians and nurses and people that can monitor them and take their vitals as they go along. But we've had no real incidents or problems. It's, you know, NAD has been around for a long time, but it's never been used the way we're using it. And we've attached a typical therapeutic program to it, where if you've taken heroin for 10 years, you have more problems than just taking heroin. And we try to work those things out with these people, and it's worked very well.
Well, we're talking with Mike Gibbons, who is a candidate for U.S. Senate. He'll be on the primary ballot. There will be a challenge on the Republican side, and we're going to give equal opportunity to Mr. Renacci, who will be coming on the program in the next few weeks. Mike, I want to turn the corner here and ask you some questions specifically of position issues along social issues. As the Ohio Christian Alliance is a social issue organization, we're pro-life, we're pro-family. Let's talk a minute about religious liberty, because over the last few years of the Obama administration, with, of course, the Supreme Court's acknowledgement of homosexual marriage, and then the policies of the Obama administration, the Justice Department under Eric Holder actually doing away with the Defense of Marriage Act, and then a lot of churches saw it as open season on the church and on religious liberty. What is your position on, so for instance, in Ohio, there's a bill at the Ohio State House, LGBTQ rights bill is what they call it. It would carve out special rights for lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and what they call the term queer individuals. Actually, it's a little ambiguous as to the sexual orientation or identity as to what these protections would be, but many see it as a challenge to people of faith and conscience. It would affect individuals, businesses, and churches. What is your position on that?
Well, you know, I'm kind of a guy that wants to let everybody do what they want to do if they're not hurting me. I'm Roman Catholic. I believe in what I learned all those years. I went to Catholic grade school, went to Catholic high school. But I think to a great degree, the Republican Party, which is largely stood opposed to a lot of this recognition of non-traditional marriage and whatnot, I think we kind of blew it. I think I would have been just fine with civil unions and giving people that of the same sex that wanted to live together the rights that they would enjoy as a married couple. But I don't think you can change 25,000 years of human history with a law. It makes no sense to me. I'm not sure of the implications for the family long term. There's a lot of studies out there, but I think it's unfortunate. I don't think we really know the costs of what we're doing right now, or what we're being told we have to do, I guess is the best way to put it. I still have trouble with the idea that after 25,000 years, we're going to change the definition of traditional marriage. So, I we have laws in place and we have to live with them. But just as, we've had lots of laws that have been changed. I stand for traditional ideas of marriage and gender recognition, and I see no reason to change that. With that said, I would never discriminate against anybody, and I don't think that we need to call attention to what people are doing in their bedroom and establish a whole new set of rights because they claim to be doing different things than the bulk of society. So it's it's difficult to formulate a plan that could change all this. A lot of it depends on public opinion, but I know what my opinion is.
Many candidates, when they come to speak about the issue of abortion, for instance, they'll either say, I'm pro-choice or I'm pro-life. What would you say that your position is?
Well, if I'm giving a speech, I say I'm pro-life without exception. And I was cautioned about that when I first started out. I wasn't a politician. I'm not a politician. And I told my wife, the minute I start acting like a politician, I'm going to drop from this campaign. I don't particularly like it. A lot of what they seem to behave like and stand for. If you're a politician, you just throw out sound bites. And saying you're pro-life without exception means something to a lot of people in code, particularly people that have been involved with Right to Life. I've always had a difficulty in distinguishing between a child that's conceived in rape and incest from any other child that we're trying to save. And I was told that, I have to say, I believe in, abortion only in the case of rape or incest or the health of the mother. And I know enough to know that the health of the mother is a code for an awful broad treatment of that. But, I prefer pro-life without exception because that's what I believe. And that's what I'm going to continue to say.
There's a bill currently before Congress. It's called the heartbeat bill. When a heartbeat is detected, yes, it would ban abortion at that moment. Would you support that legislation if you were called to vote on that?
I would. I would support it. And I'll tell you why I would. I would because I believe generally people believe that if a child's got a heartbeat, it's a living being. Now, I would do a lot more than that. The problem is we have Roe v. Wade. And it brings me to a conversation I had with David Osteen. Drugs are illegal, yet a lot of people are using drugs. And we can make abortions illegal, and people will still do abortions. And I truly believe, and David Osteen is the president of National Right to Life, and we had a couple-hour conversation. He really clarified a lot in my mind for me. And he said, Mike, we need to win this battle by winning hearts and minds, and we're winning. And I knew that. Abortions have been declining over the last decade, and it's wonderful to see.
Well, Mike, we've run out of time. Yes. Mike Gibbons, who's running for U.S. Senate in the Republican primary on May 1st, if you want to learn more about his positions, you can go to his website. What is your website, Mike?
It's GibbonsForOhio.com, and boy, did that time go fast.
It sure did. Mike, thanks for coming on the program today, and we really appreciate hearing some of your views, and there'll be other opportunities for you as well.
Great.
Thank you. God bless.
Great talking to you, Chris. Thank you. Bye.
And if you missed any of today's program, you can hear the remainder of it on our website at ohioca.org. Don't go away. We'll be right back after these messages.
Who's looking out for seniors today? It's not the AARP. AARP worked overtime to help pass Obamacare, the legislation that cut over $700 billion from Medicare. And AARP supports the death tax, which can rob families of over half their savings due to the death of a loved one. Seniors know that AARP would rather make millions peddling insurance products than support the policies that actually help America's elderly. That's why America's seniors count on the 60 Plus Association. For more than 20 years, 60 Plus has been fighting for the seniors that AARP has left behind. 60 Plus Plus fought against Obamacare and continues to fight every day for its repeal in Washington. And 60 Plus is the leading national organization working to repeal the death tax once and for all so that families can pass down their businesses and farms to the next generation, not the IRS. Stand up for your values. Join 60 Plus today. Visit 60plus.org or call 703-807-2070. This message paid for and authorized by the 60 Plus Association.
On March 8th and 9th, Cleveland Right to Life's nationally acclaimed Bringing America Back to Life convention will be held in Cleveland. This two-day event has become a touchstone, a point of renewal for the national pro-life movement. Join us to hear presenters such as much-loved blogger Matt Walsh, George Barna, whose books and research on cultural trends have positively impacted the nation, Elizabeth Johnston, the activist mommy, whose vlogging shut down Teen Vogue's promiscuous print magazine, Walter Heyer, a former transgender whose sex change regret healing ministry reaches into 150 countries. These are a sample of the 20 presenters who will provide coverage of the full spectrum of life issues. Join us March 9th and 10th as we bring America back to life. Visit bringingamericabacktolife.org or call 440-503-8278. That's bringingamericabacktolife.org or 440-503-8278.
And we're back, and thank you for joining us. We're going to talk about the memo that was released by the Republican Intelligence Committee that during the investigation of what is going on in Washington, and this is Chairman Nunes who released the memo last week, and of course, then the president had to sign off on it. This is very telling. It basically is confirming a lot of the rumors in Washington. With us on the phone is Dr. Jerome Corsi, who is a writer for InfoWars. He also previously wrote for WorldNetDaily.com. He's author of a number of books. And in fact, the Swift Boat book back in the day with John Kerry when he was running against George Bush in 2004 played a big role that year, and basically Jerry co-authored that book. There's been a number of books according to his credit as well. But let's go to a clip right now because there is breaking news that broke on Fox News last night with an interview with Congressman Trey Gowdy. Let's go to that.
So Chairman Nunes, who you worked with on this memo, has suggested that there's a lot more to come and that the investigation continues. It looks like the next place that you all are looking at is the State Department during the Obama administration. We know that there was a criminal referral that was made by Senators Graham and Grassley. In it, it includes this. The foreign source gave information to an unnamed associate of Hillary and Bill Clinton, who then gave information to an unnamed official in the Obama State Department, who then gave the information to Steele. What do you know about that?
Everything that there is to know about it, and I've known about it for over a month. If you go and read the documents at the Department of Justice, you see it. I'm troubled by it. It is one reason I have tremendous respect for Michael Horowitz, who's the Inspector General of the Department of Justice. It's one reason that I reject the notion that the IG himself alone can investigate the Department of Justice, because there is a State Department component to this. It needs to be investigated. I don't view the investigation in terms of stages. To me, it's just one continuous investigation in pursuit of all relevant facts leading towards the truth. I'm pretty troubled by what I read in the documents with respect to the role the State Department played in the fall of 2016, with including information that was used in a court proceeding. I am troubled by
it. So weeks before the election, somebody in the Obama State Department was feeding information from a foreign source to Christopher Steele.
When you hear who the source, one of the sources of that information is, you're going to think, oh my gosh, I've heard that name somewhere before. Where could it possibly have been?
And the foreign source?
The domestic source. And I'm trying to think how Secretary Clinton defined him. I think she said he was an old friend who emailed her from time to time.
Sidney Blumenthal?
That'd be really warm. You're warm. Yeah.
And that is a report last night on Fox News with Trey Gowdy basically breaking the news that they have documentation that Sidney Blumenthal, now this gets real close to the Clinton circle of advisors and confidants. You can't get any closer than that. Sidney Blumenthal goes back with the Clintons a long way. So now we see that the trail leads right back to Hillary Clinton. And then, of course, there's breaking news today as well, is that President Obama was indicating to the Justice Department wanting updates as to the investigation of Donald J. Trump as he was a candidate in the presidential election of 2016. With us on the phone to discuss it is Jerry Corsi, again, an author and a contributor to InfoWars. Jerry, welcome to the program.
Great to be back with you, Chris. Thank you.
Well, Jerry, obviously, this is just breaking left and right now. The mainstream media is obviously running interference for the Obama administration, all the players involved, and the Democratic Party, and they have yet to come to terms as to just how serious this all is.
Well, I think day by day it's getting to be more serious. I mean, here the the memo that was released on last Friday by Nunes, Devin Nunes, who is the chairman of the House Intelligence Committee, made it very, very clear that the Department of Justice and the FBI went forward to this FISA court to get electronic surveillance permission on Donald Trump, first on his campaign and then on his actually transition and even into the White House, relied on this Fusion GPS memo that had been put together by Christopher Steele. Now, the Fusion GPS memo was originally paid for. It was opposition research that Hillary Clinton's campaign and the Democratic National Committee paid for, with the money coming through Perkins Coie, the law firm, same law firm that did the birth certificate defense for Obama. And it turns out it went to Fusion GPS, which is an opposition research firm. They hired Christopher Steele in London to do the dossier on Trump and Russia collusion. He was head of MI6's Russian desk, but Christopher Steele hated Trump, and the dossier was filled with inaccuracies, and the FBI never was able to validate that the dossier was true, but yet they used it with the FISA court to get this permission to do electronic surveillance on the Trump campaign, the Trump transition, and the Trump White House, which is, you know, it's scurrilous. I mean, this violates multiple laws, including misrepresenting the Fusion GPS document to the FISA court, not representing it had been opposition research, that it had not been validated, that it was inaccurate, and then that this information ultimately got leaked to the press, got shared with the White House. The White House unmasked the names in the electronic surveillance and leaked the information to the press. I mean, it's a major, major scandal that ultimately appears if the Department of Justice and the FBI, in collusion with Obama and Hillary, were engaged in treasonous activity to deny Donald Trump the benefit of a duly elected, duly held vote of the Electoral College to be president.
This is really a constitutional crisis type element here that we have. You know, all the rumors that many people had been suspecting that the Clintons, the Obama administration, were trying to influence the election of 2016 to favor Hillary Clinton, to safeguard the Obama legacy. And of course, they were afraid that if Donald Trump was elected and a new Justice Department came in, that this is the very thing that would be happening, the unearthing of the kind of criminal activity that took place during the Obama years. And this is just the tip of the iceberg. You know, we're just not even a full 18 months into the new administration, something like 13 months, and all of this is being divulged. The Democrats have slow-walked the appointments of Donald Trump. Just conversely, how different that was that when Obama was elected in 08, that the Congress then, with the Republicans, rubber-stamped most of his nominees to posts. Just the opposite has happened. Donald Trump's has been, all of his appointments to office have been slow walked. They have been obfuscated. They've blocked them. And this is the reason why. They do not want this information out there for the general public. Jerry, I have to say that our own governor, Governor John Kasich, and I know that you've been following his career and how squirrely he can be, and certainly he said something. He rebuked the president and the members of Congress for releasing the memo. And, you know, many people just took great offense at that, that our governor, a Republican governor, would question our Republican president and members of Congress. They were doing what the people wanted them to do. We wanted this information in the open so that we could discern and read it for ourselves as to what was being said. And what it did was confirm the rumors that have been circulating around Washington for months now. Your thoughts?
Well, I think you're exactly right. I mean, Kasich, since the convention, you know, the GOP convention held in Cleveland to nominate Donald Trump, Kasich did not even attend the convention out of protest to Trump. He's been a never-Trumper from the very beginning and has more aligned with the centrist elite establishment of the RNC, the Republican National Committee, and I think has been much more centrist to the left, aligned with a lot of Obama's policies, certainly not a conservative. I don't consider Kasich, never have, to be a conservative. And right now, the American people, I think, want the truth. They want to know what the Department of Justice did and the FBI in trying to deny Donald Trump the presidency. I mean, if we have a rogue or politicized, I mean, you have Obama and Hillary using the full justice apparatus of the United States to conduct electronic surveillance on the GOP candidate running for president. That's never before happened in the history of the United States.
It really is incredible. If you know, folks, if you just think about it, what if George W. Bush and his administration and Justice Department was doing this to Barack Obama? I mean, you can imagine just how the wheels would be coming off with all the major media against the Republicans and against the Bush administration. But they seem to be silent and tone deaf here. Jerry, what's going on with these people?
Well, the mainstream media was complicit. I mean, there's now evidence that the CIA has never discontinued its Operation Mockingbird, paying the mainstream media for mouthing the talking points the CIA is putting out. I maintain, I've got a book coming out on March 13th, which is Killing the Deep State. This is a deep state conspiracy to try to deny Donald Trump the presidency. And by deep state, I mean the intelligence agencies, plus a corrupt Department of Justice, a corrupt FBI, working in conjunction with the hard left of the Democratic Party to put Hillary in the White House. That's what it was all about.
You know, Jerry, what we're looking at here, obviously, this other story that came out yesterday, Grassley, and that's Senator Grassley and Senator Graham, released copy of request for criminal probe of dossier author. What is going on with this one?
Well, again, this is a deeper level, more additional level to what Devin Nunes, the chairman of the House Intelligence Committee, released last Friday in the memo, because Grassley and Lindsey Graham, both on the Senate Judiciary Committee, now we have a more complete version, less heavily redacted version of the letter that they sent to the Department of Justice and to the FBI, demanding that Christopher Steele, the author of this lying, made-up dossier on Russian collusion against Trump, be investigated for criminal prosecution because he lied to the FBI on numerous instances. He denied and lied that he was actively leaking this to the press months ahead of time, but, you know, during the election cycle, going back to September 2016 through October 2016, lied about that to the FBI, put forward this dossier, which has filled with scurrilous, undocumented, unverified information that was presented to the FBI and then to the FISA court as if it were gospel truth.
Right.
That's the basis, is that, you know, the Department of Justice and the FBI under Obama were lying, using this dossier they knew was not valid, was not honest, was not true, to try to deny Trump the election or to impeach him afterwards on Russian collusion. Russian collusion isn't even a crime. There's no crime, Russian collusion. And yet this is the basis on which they were going after Donald Trump, and have been now for 2 years.
You know, they brought this falsified information, and the question is, did they know it was false? Well, of course they did. They knew the source of it. First of all, that it was provided by the opposition campaign of Hillary Clinton, the opposition campaign to Donald Trump. It was Hillary Clinton's campaign that provided it, and they bring it before a FISA court to seek a warrant for, you know, for surveillance against Donald Trump and his team. This is unbelievable, Jerry. I mean, the folks in our network, they get it. They understand it. They want justice. They want heads to roll. You know, those who were corrupt and misused their authority and their power in the FBI and the Justice Department. The Grassley, you know, request for a copy for criminal probe, will this lead to some prosecutions, if nothing else, from some smaller fish along the way? What do you think is going to happen here?
I think we're just at the beginning. I think that with the last Friday, when the Nunes memo was made public, the entire narrative shifted. Up until this point, it had all been the accusations Donald Trump colluded with Russia. That's over. There's no indictments. There's no proof. There's no nothing. And with the Nunes memo, we see how this narrative was created on the falsified report that ultimately traces back to Sidney Blumenthal, which was the original source of the information that was fed to Christopher Steele on this opposition research to produce the dossier. Now, the FBI knew it was, and what the Grassley memo makes clear is the FBI knew that the Fusion GPS dossier was not verified, and they knew that Steele was really basically lying to them. But they continued to advance Steele as if he were credible to the FISA court, even knowing that he had lied and been giving information to the press, had lied to the FBI. They never stopped using it. They never said this was opposition research. Now, all of that, I think very few people noticed it, but when President Trump came back from Ohio, the press secretary in the airplane told the press that the White House counsel have agreed that we need a special prosecutor, a second, you know, this is different from Mueller, to investigate the FBI and the DOJ. That special prosecutor has not been appointed yet, but you've got the president's legal team saying they give their approval to the appointment of that special prosecutor. I think that's the first step forward beginning to happen.
Well, again, this leads back to Attorney General Jeff Sessions recusing himself on this matter early in his appointment and the Trump administration on anything Russian. And so you have Mueller out there overturning every stone, coming up empty. And yet, now it's all leading back to the Clinton campaign and collusion within the Justice Department and the FBI. We're talking with Jerry Corsi, author and commentator with InfoWars. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to come right back on the other side. Don't you go away.
Who's looking out for seniors today? It's not the AARP. AARP worked overtime to help pass Obamacare, the legislation that cut over $700 billion from Medicare. And AARP supports the death tax, which can rob families of over half their savings due to the death of a loved one. Seniors know that AARP would rather make millions peddling insurance products than support the policies that actually help America's elderly. That's why America's seniors count on the 60 Plus Association. For more than 20 years, 60 Plus has been fighting for the seniors that AARP has left behind. 60-plus fought against Obamacare and continues to fight every day for its repeal in Washington. And 60-plus is the leading national organization working to repeal the death tax once and for all so that families can pass down their businesses and farms to the next generation, not the IRS. Stand up for your values. Join 60-plus today. Visit 60plus.org or call 703-807-2070. This message paid for and authorized by the 60 Plus Association.
And we're back with Jerry Corsi from InfoWars, where he's currently a daily contributor on InfoWars, also author. Jerry, you're working on a book of the Deep State. Tell us a little bit about that work, that book you're working on.
The book is going to be out on the 13th of March, and you can see it now. It's on Amazon. The title of the book is Killing the Deep State, and the subtitle is going to be the Plan to Save President Trump. But Killing the Deep State is going to be published by Newsmax, and under my name, Corsi Drome, C-O-R-S-I, you can see it in pre-sales on Amazon.com right now.
Oh, again, the name of the book again is?
Killing the Deep State. And it's subtitled, The Plan to Save Donald Trump.
Well, that has definitely been the theme of the Trump administration, is the deep state. And I think one of the things that you and I maybe had disagreement on, I thought the president should have been able to bring a lot more appointments to Washington. You were of the opinion that the way to drain the swamp is to let some of these appointments go empty and not fill them and basically do it that way. I could see reason behind what you're saying. But then also on the other side of that, it's kind of a two-edged sword. When you don't have your people in place, then the deep state is able to basically create its folly, which they've undoubtedly been able to do here. But thankfully, are being rooted out, shining a light on these things. And so, you know, we do pray for our president. The Bible instructs us to pray for all those in authority. You know, the president's doing a lot of things that I believe are garnering the favor of God, like recognizing Jerusalem as the capital of Israel, blessing Israel. You know, the Bible says in Genesis 12:3, I will bless those who bless thee, I will curse those who curse thee, and in thee shall all the nations of the earth be blessed, the Abrahamic blessing. The president blessing Israel, you know, one of the first presidents, I think, ever to actually pray at the Wailing Wall while he was president, sitting president. So a lot of things that the president's doing, spoke to the March for Life. He's valuing life and religious liberty. And I think God is really blessing him. And in that way, his enemies, their own plans are being turned against them. So, you know, the nets that they're setting for the president, they're falling into them themselves. And we're seeing this repeatedly. And we continue to pray for him. Those members serving in Congress. And we do have some courageous people like, you know, Devin Nunes has done a fantastic job. Your opinion about his work in the Intelligence Committee in the House, your thoughts?
Oh, I think he's a real hero, just as I think you're going to find Senator Grassley in the Senate Judiciary Committee is a real hero. I want to remind everybody, if you look back to Watergate, you know, the break-in occurred before the 1972 election, and Richard Nixon did not resign until August 1974. Now, that's 2 years later. It's going to take a while. People are, you know, wanting there to be immediate justice. They're wanting to be immediate prosecution. And it's going to take a systematic effort here to begin investigations on the Department of Justice, the FBI, the IRS, the Hillary and Obama operatives. But I think that Donald Trump has turned the tide, and instead of the impetus being on investigating Donald Trump and Russian collusion, I think that investigation is dead. Nothing could be proved of Russian collusion. But I think now the tide has turned, and Trump is beginning a counterattack, and it's going to basically produce a lot of fruit in terms of, over time, indictments and major reform in our justice system, which I think is badly needed after the 8 years of Obama corruption and politicalization of the bureaucracy.
Now, a lot of this information, of course, is tied right to the Clinton campaign and to Hillary Clinton herself. Cindy Blumenthal, you're talking about a very close, confidant of Hillary Clinton. How is this going to be tied to her directly? And what will be the ramifications of that, in your opinion?
Well, Hillary is going to be part of the, ultimately was very much involved in all of these activities. The Clinton Foundation, the Clinton campaign paid for the Fusion GPS dossier along with the DNC. And by the way, that Clinton campaign was controlling the DNC at this point, with money going through attorneys Perkins Coy to Fusion GPS. Now, Perkins Coy, by the way, is the same law firm that defended Obama on the birth certificate. Now, you're going to find that Hillary's funding of this lying dossier is going to have certain criminal implications, as it was used for the FISA court-ordered approval. And I think where Hillary's going to have the real trouble is that I'm sure that the electronic surveillance of Trump resulting from the FISA court-authorized electronic surveillance got into Hillary's hands.
Well, do you think that there ought, real quick, we're running out of time, do you think there ought to be a special counsel to investigate this matter further?
Yes, and the White House has already approved it. So all we need now is for the Justice Department to create the role and appoint someone.
That is the opinion of Congressman Jim Jordan and many others as well. Jerry Corsi, thank you for coming on the program today. Again, you can follow Jerry's articles on InfoWars. And the name of the book again is, Jerry?
Killing the Deep State, the plan to save President Donald Trump.
And it's already on Amazon. You can find it there. Very good.
It's already on Amazon in pre-sales. It will be out in the bookstores March 13th.
We look forward to it. We'll have to have you back. Thank you, Jerry, for being my guest today.
My pleasure. Thank you.
God bless. Good night, everyone.
You have been listening to News in Focus with your host, Chris Long, president of the Ohio Christian Alliance. To learn more about the issues that matter most to you and your family, visit online at ohioca.org. That's ohioca.org. Thank you for listening. This program is sponsored by the Ohio Christian Alliance of Akron, Ohio.